With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Gavin Emmett and welcome to the BT Sport MotoGP podcast. Today I'm joined by Keith Ewan and Julian Ryder here at Le Mans, ahead of round five of the MotoGP season. Right, so first of all, we've got to start, haven't we, with Valentino Rossi, winner last time out at Jerez. He led every lap after qualifying on pole, the first time he's ever done that in his Premier Class career. It's been 7 years as well since he won back-to-back races. Can he do it here in Le Mans this weekend?
Well, we'll wait and see if he's pulling wheelies again on a Friday like he was last time out. He looked very happy, didn't he, right from the beginning?
You spotted that very early on. The answer, Gavin, is I don't know and nobody else knows. As Valentino himself said at the end of Jerez, this isn't the script for the year because we're discovering how the tyres work at every new track.
Yeah, on the head there, Jules. Tyres are going to be the crucial issue here. I mean, Michelin home Grand Prix for them, so they're going to try and make it work, of course. They've brought more tyres here than we've seen ever before. Both ends, three for the front, three for the rear, different construction than we've seen before. But the big deal for me is how warm it is here. If it carries on like this right the way through till Sunday, that could really chuck the cat amongst the pigeons.
Yeah. If you were Michelin, would you be bringing tyres for 20 degrees centigrade? I don't think so.
You talk about all this. We've had three winners, haven't we, so far this year. So what did he do right to make him on top in Jerez?
Probably got lucky, I would think. He might have had a good base setting, turned up on a Friday. It worked very, very well for him. And again, you know, 37 years old, you got a lot of experience. His team are great on that front as well. They might have just, I say lucky, at this level, that's a bit insulting. Yeah. And I don't mean to be that. They turned up, they had a base setting that worked straight away. They were able to tune that finally. He worked a lot on what was going to happen in the race. And don't forget, he comes from an era of non-electronics. He's a man that control a throttle. We heard about Jorge Lorenzo only being on 80% down the back straight because the wheels were spinning. Valentino Rossi, the best traction control he's got is in his right hand.
Yes. Notice also that Jorge's top speeds were considerably quicker than Valentino's.
Notice that as well. So what you're saying is that's complete BS.
I am saying that top speed and the straight isn't what matters. It's how you go around corners on a motorbike usually.
But still interesting that I think now that you've brought that little can of worms out, we might as well investigate.
Why not?
That was when Jorge was saying he was only using 80% throttle, which alluded to the fact that he was only going 80% the speed he could do down the back straight, when in actual fact, as you quite rightly have just pointed out, that all the timesheets that we saw, unless there's some there that I didn't see, but
nope.
I'm fairly sure I'm right, is that the top speed was exactly the same, if not a little bit more, than just about everyone else, including Valentino.
Exactly. Jorge was quicker than Valentino by 3 or 4 kph. Not a vast amount, he was quicker.
So BS, then what is it?
Valentino might have been using 75% throttle because that's what it needed.
Great, Jules.
Everyone, it could have worked during the end, but he hasn't won here in Le Mans since 2008. I'm trying to rack my brains to see if that was on a Michelin at the time. That was before we went to a single tyre rule in the Bridgestones, but he made the switch, didn't he?
He made the switch at Misano.
Yeah, so could have been on Michelin. So that's the last time he won here. Is that going to be the key, him and Michelin in France? Well,
he said at Jerez, didn't he, that he remembers, you know, he grew up on Michelins. Well, he didn't grow up on these Michelins, but he has a feeling for what those tyres will do.
Is there anyone better when a tyre goes off and isn't working?
Let's remind you of what you said in the first place. There's three different winners. You know, we're in a situation here where, you know, we don't know. I don't think Michelin know. I don't think any of the teams know on a Thursday where we're sat at the moment.
Okay, so talk about one of those winners, Marc Márquez. He's been mature, picked up another podium when he knew he wasn't going to win. He's leading the championship. Do you think this can last, this newfound Márquez, not crashing during the races?
Yes, 100%. I think we said in commentary, Jules, that the maturity of Marc Márquez, 23-year-old, and we're talking about being mature. I mean, he... 16 points, third place, miles better than the crash. That's the new Marc Márquez. He's dangerous, isn't he?
Yeah, that is really terrifying. Mark Marquez thinking that way, thinking, I'm still leading the championship. It's a good day at the office. But let's remember, 12 months ago, this is the track that first really exposed the weaknesses of the Honda.
I just wonder with Mark Marquez, I spoke to him earlier and he said, I learned so much from watching Valentino, who wasn't the fastest rider last year, be at the top. I don't think I'm the fastest rider so far this year, and I'm at the top. So he hopes it's going to happen. And as we say, there's a track, Le Mans in itself, OK, it's got some bits where it flows a little bit around the back, but a lot of hard acceleration from a few of those quite stop-start corners.
It is a bit of a Mickey Mouse track, isn't it? It's not the kind of track that, that's got much flow to it at all anywhere. I don't think we can write anybody off at the moment. I don't think anybody's got to the bottom of the electronics package. I don't think anybody's getting anywhere near to the bottom of what Michelin are going to be bringing along. And I think we're going to see... I mean, did they say they were going to stick on the same carcass last time out? And here we are, all of a sudden, we've got another carcass.
Yeah,
here.
Because a test last week at Mugello has thrown up new information.
And now the sun's out as well here, and if it's cooking hot, then it's going to be just so difficult for these teams.
The only bloke who says he actually actively likes this track is Jorge Lorenzo.
Had good success here, obviously won here last year as well. So
Danny Pedrosa's got a good record around here as well, so watch out for Danny Pedrosa.
If Danny can get the tyres, if these new tyres happen to play to Danny Pedrosa, I wouldn't mind a quick bet on him to be the fourth winner.
So that's what I'd like to ask. Is it a three-way battle for the championship, or can others get involved?
I think it's already a three-way battle. I think the points gap's already too big for it to be anything else.
Yeah, I think that motorcycle racing is a strange old thing, and it can throw up quite a lot of variables just yet. We're on the fifth round already, I think. I thought for a moment it was the beginning of the year, but we've already on round five, and we're still no really closer to knowing who the hell is going to pull it off. I mean, Valentino has chucked himself straight back in the mix. Mark Marquez is still there or thereabouts. This is going to be the crux of it for Marquez and the Honda here at Le Mans.
You just mentioned Danny Pedrosa there. One thing he mentioned after the test in Jerez, which all the riders pretty much were there last time out, the day after the race. He said, we need more time on these tyres, that there have been so many changes. A couple of the riders, Ducati, were saying, we've built a bike around tyres that aren't here anymore. So how do we make, first race, we're saying Michelin were going well. The last race, we had a lot of people complaining about them. How have they done?
Well, the first race, they had lots of testing at Qatar, so they knew what they were coming there with. That makes all the difference. They've had no testing here at all. They're still evolving. There's nobody going to know today what those tyres are going to do tomorrow. We're going to find out when we get to Friday, and as soon as we get to proper testing. Look, Scott Redding had the worst Grand Prix I've ever seen him have last time out.
He said it's the first time in his career he's finished last.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, Scott Redding, that was all down to tyres and the fact they just couldn't dial them in with the bike. So, and you might have someone else in a different team this week that's got the same problem.
I think that's exactly what we're going to see. We don't know, do we? We don't know. But it's controlled tyres. This is what happens with a controlled tyre. It cannot suit all motorcycles at every track. It cannot suit all riders at every track. This is what happens.
About Scott Redding there, you just mentioned him. I want to talk about the British riders. Was it a blip, just a one-off for Scott? Because he had such a good pre-season. He looked good in those two races prior to Jerez.
Well, if anywhere is going to bring him back out, his box is going to be here, isn't it? 2013, first time he'd won a Grand Prix. So, he's got great memories when it comes to Le Mans. It's the kind of thing that's going to...
First time he won a Moto2 race.
Moto2 Grand Prix, indeed, sorry. It's going to be one of those things where he's got good memories here, and that kind of memory of a racetrack usually gets the best out of a rider, whatever they've got underneath them.
Continuing on the British theme, Cal Crutchlow finally picked up his first points of the year, but... He knows that's not where he's aiming. There's been rumours putting him at HRC this week. I suggest they came out of Cal's mouth more than anything, but he obviously should be higher up.
Well, there's rumours putting him there because Danny Pedrosa, the rumours that he's going to be at Yamaha alongside Valentino Rossi. And noticeably, Valentino in the press conference earlier on didn't completely dismiss it and said he'd make quite a nice teammate.
He said
they've always got on, haven't they?
As far as... You watch those two over the years in Parc Fermé, Valentino and Danny. Nothing but understanding and respect between those two, is there?
But in answer to your question, Cal Crutchlow at HRC, well, I tell you what, if Cal has managed to jump ship from Ducati and land on an LCR Honda, which at the time looked like a smart move, and now jump ship from an LCR Honda onto an HRC Honda, he will be leading a charmed life. And he's 30 years old now.
Yes, he is. It is possible. Remember, HRC have done this sort of thing, putting a one-season rider in. Like Alex Barros, like Oyama, it's been done by Honda, as they.
Yeah, it might seem strange, but
he's got to show something more, hasn't he?
100%. He knows that more than anybody else. I mean, it's without being critical of Cal, because the one thing they will get with Cal Crutchlow is a 1,000% trier.
What about Bradley Smith? Again, Disappointment for him in Jerez. Not where we expect him to be, especially after last season. He's been replaced already. We've seen Jonas Folger has come in for next year. I think he's probably going to be glad he's already signed that KTM deal, isn't he?
It was an in-car convo. Me, Hodgie, Jules, were all having this conversation about Bradley on the way down here. Right now, it looks like a really good deal that he's done because he's gone off, done a deal for whatever money it is. It's done and dusted. If that deal was being made now, it might be a little bit less money because his stock has fallen very slightly this year at the moment, Bradley, and he'll be aware of that and be trying to counter it.
But he had a big test, actually, when he was in Jerez. He says, I haven't found the miracle cure just yet, but I feel I've got somewhere to start from when we come here to Le Mans.
Well, everybody is searching for a base setting, aren't they, with the Michelins, everybody.
And so Michelin keep changing the tyres just to make sure they don't get it.
Yep.
So maybe not positive on those three. What about Alstom and Eugene Laverty, though? Ninth in the championship. He's had that fourth place when we were in Argentina. Perhaps the result last time out was even better, though.
He's on the man on the way up at the moment, isn't he? I mean, he's overcome injury. He's overcome a wedding.
can he move on, though? Can he go even further? Can he stay in this championship? Because he is fighting for his MotoGP career.
That is the big question. He had three races to prove he deserved to stay as far as his team were concerned. Note that once he'd proved he was good enough to stay, they bought him a new clutch. That's the way it works in this paddock. No one throws a bunch of bits at you to find out whether you're any good. You prove you're some good and then they give you some bits.
He's on the rise. And if you think back not too long ago, Eugene Laverty was a man that stock was quite high. He was a man that was sought after not so many years ago. You know, he again has got to find that setting. He's got to keep the momentum moving forwards.
But it means we are talking again about 2017. I've mentioned already, Jonas Folger has been confirmed here in Le Mans, riding for Tech 3 Yamaha next year. We know there's going to be one spot less, or not less than this year. There's only been 23. We're expecting 24 spots on the grid. We know Sam Lowes is coming up. We think Joan Zarco is coming up as well. So what are the rumours are we hearing about on the ground, apart from obviously Pedrosa to Yamaha? The Maverick Vinales, we've heard about him possibly staying at Suzuki.
Only because the money he seemed to want, or his management wanted, that Yamaha weren't too keen on. Let's just go back to that 24th spot, by the way, because those that haven't been watching the press on that one at the moment, the 24th spot that was up for tender for next year to fill the grid, that was the full grid for Erta, the FIM, and of course Dorna wanted. The manufacturers basically have bitten back and said, you know, you're going to be putting us under pressure to provide more motorcycles. The only three that could were Suzuki, KTM and Aprilia.
Yeah.
Everyone else has already got the requisite number of motorcycles out on the racetrack, leased
proper
or otherwise.
Satellite teams, yeah.
So it was only those three manufacturers that could have provided those bikes, and they are under pressure to move their development forward in the teams that they've already got, and they've stressed that to the powers that be. And so the powers that be have decided that we're going to stick with 23 teams.
I've also heard that Sito Pons, who looked like the most likely to get that, found out that Suzuki might not be able to follow him, and he went after a Yamaha. But what I heard within the paddock is a few too many bridges have been burned in the past from Sito. My words. These were words from other people in the paddock.
One of Sito's immortal quotes: I did not come to this paddock to make friends.
No, and
he's been as true as his word.
But Zarco has confirmed today he'll be riding in the 8 hour for Suzuki. He'll be testing the Suzuki GP bike. Should we be putting him already on one of those bikes? I mean, we've heard it's been a done deal, but no confirmation as yet.
Problem's got to be is that Aleix is now going good again. He's bitten back, hasn't he?
Aleix
Espargaró looked like he was out of there for a while.
But with the old chassis and the old Japanese engineers alike, going back to the old stuff doesn't tend to endear you to
them. If they're developing and they're looking forward already to 2017, anybody's guess. I think the speculation... Mugello is going to be the most exciting time of the year, isn't it? Because I think we're going to get a raft of announcements come Mugello.
Well, I spoke to Andrea Iannone just a little bit ago, and he said that Mugello and Barcelona, as far as there, that he's not looking to have anything down on paper. He said, I should have some news for you by Barcelona, was Iannone's comment.
In other words, his manager will be summoned to Ducati, as was promised, at Mugello.
To talk about
The two Andreas are another subject of our in-car convo as well, weren't they? Would one of them stay or would both of them go? Was the coincidence that Ducati giving Iannone such a slap and holding on to his contract rather than... Was that a fact that suddenly Lorenzo had actually... intimated that he wanted to sign a contract with Ducati? Is that what's the real reason behind it? Well, there's so many schemes going on behind the scenes.
There are. I mean, back to the two things that happened at Jerez. Susi talking to David Tardozzi. Who's going to be the second runner? What do Ducati want? Said Suzuki. And David said, whatever Lorenzo wants, he'll get. And then Gav talking to Ago, wonderful little moment. And Ago saying to you, Let us not forget, Ducati are employing Lorenzo not to win races, but to win the world championship.
So he needs good backup. Which one would you choose? We mentioned about Dovi's setup. Would that help Lorenzo do his job? Probably not. Ian One's a bit of a wild charger. He'd make better bet as far as perhaps forward momentum is concerned. Will he carry that on? Has he faded? Have we seen the best?
Does Lorenzo want that in the other side of the pit?
So many questions.
And there are obviously going to be rumours about them to Suzuki, any space if Vinales goes, and to Yamaha if Vinales doesn't go. So much going on at the moment. We're obviously going to try and stay across it throughout the weekend as much as possible. But before that, we're going to move on to Moto2. Because while in MotoGP, we haven't been able to sing the praises too much of the British riders so far this year, we've got Sam Lowes really doing the business so far. At the top of his game, he's impressing so many people in the paddock that everyone wants to talk to him. But he's adamant he'll be staying at Aprilia next year. That's by the by. He's got a 10-point lead in the championship this year. Can he maintain that run?
He's on schedule, isn't he? And I mean, that's all you can say at the moment. The Kalex is new to him. The tyres aren't. He knows the tracks. He knows where he's going with performance-wise with those tyres. Doesn't have the same problems we have in MotoGP with everybody's variables. I think he can. I think he can go the whole way. He's on the right bike. He's in the right frame of mind. He's the right age. He's got that maturity as well.
He's in the right team as well. The Gresini team. And I've never seen Fausto Gresini look so enthusiastic for a very long time about one of his riders.
That's a good point. And he's got a rider who's happy to go over to Indonesia, as Sam has done this week, and spend a couple of days there doing some promo work for the team. But Sam is the fourth different winner this year. It's only Sam's second Grand Prix win, actually, after last year. So he's still quite new to it. Four different winners, though.
Yeah, but, like Marc Marquez, he's found the maturity to stay with it. He's a different Sam to the one we saw last year. It's not a win or crash.
Yeah, even last year, Keith, I think you're dead right. That Jerez race, the regularity of his lap times, despite the fact it was the normal rather leery style in places, his precision, if you look down the lap times, was remarkable.
I'm talking about that style. It's a bit Marquez-esque, isn't it? The way he's been riding that Moto2, the way he lets it get out there a little bit. Maybe doesn't get the elbow down so much as Marquez. But that loose style, we've seen that. We've seen it Tito Rabat-style work. So what about Zarco, Rins, Folger, Luthi? Who are his challengers going to be?
I think all of them. I think that's exactly what you've got. Is Moto2's back at its best, isn't it? You're not going to be able to bet too much on a winner each week. It's about who has got that consistency over the year.
For the title, his challengers, I think, are Zarco and Rins. But there's a few others who are going to take wins, race wins in there, aren't there?
Let's move on to Moto3 at Jerez. And that was the story of the Spanish Grand Prix weekend, as we talked about there. From the back of the grid, Brad Binder taking victory in that race. First time he's won a Grand Prix. And he is leading the championship there as well, extending his lead. One thing I want to ask first, though. First South African winner since John Eckerold. Monza, 1981, 350s. Tell me about John Eckerold, Keith.
Johnny Eckerold, tough guy, different kind of character. Privateer, remember, as well, in those days. He was a privateer Yamaha man up against the factory Kawasaki's of the likes of Anton Mang. And a fantastic rider, but tough, unforgiving kind of character. Completely the opposite situation with Brad Binder, I think. I've have seen people win from the back. Our own Hodgie has done it, even overtaking James Toseland, I think it was, as well, in that race.
Marquez has done it.
In a shortened, difficult race. It wasn't a straightforward, dry, full set.
Doing it in a shorter race is all the more impressive.
We'll bend to your particular story if you want to, but at the end of the day, Brad Binder winning that race from the back.
It is the record, by the way. It is the record of positions made up from 35th on the grid to first in the race.
It was a phenomenal bit of riding.
I don't think I've seen anything like it, and he's going to remember it forever as well. What a way to win your first Grand Prix.
Will it spur him on? Will it give him something over the rest?
I think he should have already had a win this year. Qatar should have been his, but only because the finish line was further up the straight, and so Antonelli managed to slipstream him by the time he got there.
And he looked like even if he'd been in the slipstream, he probably wouldn't have got out of it and won there. So he's put on a good show so far this year. Picked up points. Again, we're talking about it across the championships. Picked up points when they haven't looked like they were going to be forthcoming. So everyone's eyes are going to be on him. But the Italians are there, aren't they? Bulliger, how impressed are we by that young rookie and his
massively
podium?
I think.
Yeah, I think Aaron Canet as well, that's walked in and has looked maybe a little inconsistent previously, but if he can pick that up this year
too. But he's 16 years old.
Exactly. We've got a lot of youngsters. I think Moto3 is in good shape. In fact, all three classes are in fantastic shape. This year's probably the best that I can remember all three classes in the
depth
Grand Prix.
Depth of quality in all three. I think you're right.
Well, it was an interesting quote from Valentino Rossi, wasn't there, in the pre-event press conference, saying how strong Moto 2 was with the riders coming up. And that is now the breeding ground for MotoGP. There's no one looking at superbikes, really. I've heard a few people this week saying, what about Chas Davis, Johnny Ray to move to Yamaha in MotoGP? Their names aren't being brought into the picture, are they?
Unfortunately, nobody in World Superbike is being considered in this paddock. And Chas, after the last weekend, if he was 25 years old, he may be. He's 29.
As a young Dutchman that might well find his way in here, you know?
Yeah, somewhere along the lines.
Mr. Vandermark.
Michael Vandermark having something to come across. I mean, because he's young.
He's a Honda man. He's a Honda man. Honda will be looking at him as well. I mean, he's been groomed over the last little while.
We could use a Dutchman in there.
Well, that's why the Dorna, they're not slow on marketplaces, are they? They'll know exactly who they need to be putting the right kind of encouragement to.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Mickey makes his way over. Right, boys, I better let you get you back to doing all your research before the weekend. I know there's lots of it going on in the pub tonight. Anyway, so thank you very much. Make sure you download our review podcast as well after the race here in Le Mans. Remember, of course, you can watch every single session live this weekend, all in HD on BT Sport 2.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.